Rita da victory. Würde liegen, was geht von der Wahl zu fliegen, 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 was geht von der Wahl.
Michael Moore, the director of Canadian Bacon and the producer-host of TV Nation. But we all know this is a radio nation. So listen to 99.5 FM WBAI, New York.
Good evening and welcome once again to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basir M. Chawi, and we are here again at WBAI, listener-sponsored radio in New York City. This evening we're going to address some of the serious problems that are taking place within the New York City Board of Miseducation. They are many, they are serious, and they impact on people of color. Whether you are a parent or a student, a teacher or administrator, there are issues in regards to the conduct of the New York City Board of Miseducation. This evening, we're going to look at a number of cases whereby the New York City Board of Miseducation must be accused of serious malfeasance, racism, discrimination, and I guess a number of other things that we can charge the New York City Board of Miseducation with. In the studio, we've got a cast of thousands. We've got a lot of people because there are a lot of stories to be told in regards to what is taking place. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to start with two sisters to come and actually begin to frame our discussion. And that is, we've got with us Sister Barbara Smith Boyd and Sister Betty Davis. And I'm going to start with you, Barbara, and then, you know, you, Betty, can fill in as we begin to frame the nature of the discussion this evening.
Okay, thank you, Basia. As you know, I'm a member of the school board in District 13 in Brooklyn, and we've been challenging quite a number of issues around that have to do with retention of teachers. Many of our outspoken teachers and dedicated teachers have been under fire, and one of our sisters who you brought to these microphones, Sister Yasantwa Nzinga, is still now without a employment. She's still without a salary, still in the struggle. And over this last year, I've met other educators, one of which I brought with me today, too, who also has been challenging the Board of Education in an effort just to teach our children, to provide them with some quality education. And those kinds of educators who are concerned and who are willing to put themselves out, give the extra kind of time that our children need, seem to get the hardest way to go. And I think those are some of the things that our audience needs to know about.
Most definitely. One of the things also that needs to be said is that aside from being a member of the school board in District 13 in Central Brooklyn, you are also currently a candidate for city council. And I think that needs to be said because you very clearly have a position regarding education and miseducation. And that's one of the things that I think we have to hold those who purport to represent us in political office. We have to hold them to task for going ahead and having positions regarding education, because too many times our so-called elected officials do not have any kind of position that needs to be articulated in any kind of way, shape, or form. Betty Davis, why don't you chime in here and tell what you've been doing and some of the people who you have brought to the table in the discussion this evening.
First of all, hello, everybody. Thanks for having me, and Charlie. It's always a pleasure to come here. And tonight, we're not just going to vent. We're not about venting. We're about a table and a plan of action. Brother Mawu Straker to my left is from the New Bed-Stuy Boxing Center, but he's also a person with a community conscience. And he's here to talk about holding those people who claim to be our leaders accountable, because it is as a result of their absence that this power vacuum is being filled with fascism and racism. So we're talking about a plan of action. My personal history is one of success. I've always been successful. Now, I'm not a person that brags or boasts. The reason I say I've always been successful is I've always had community support. it would never occur to me to go into the school as a teacher or as an administrator and not find out what the community wants, what the community needs, and where they see their future. And because of this belief that was ingrained in me from a child, I've always been successful. My last success was Sarah J. Hale. I was so successful that when I called for an audit, because the school had been under construction for 10 years, and yet it was still falling down, they'd spent over $6 million, and I could not see where the repairs were, I was removed within a week. However, because of parents, teachers, and the administrators that I brought with me, and community support from business people, we turned that school around literally in 3 days. And we're here to say that success is possible. You can do it in one generation. The children need you. It's time for you to act. To my right is Mr. Poynter, the founder of the New Abolitionist Movement. And we believe that what's going on is nothing less than ethnic cleansing. Okay, that is what this agenda is about. They intend for this educational process that they are dehumanizing our children with to end up in incarceration. That's the agenda. And it's interesting, I'm sure you know, Brother Bazir, the people of Mali are hosting a conference, an international conference, on miseducation of black children all over the world. This agenda that they are using in the United States is being repeated throughout the world. So much so, they're calling an international conference about it in November. So it's time for us to act.
One of the things that becomes very apparent is that when people who are educators and choose to do so as a career are attacked where their livelihood is at stake, that very often these people become traumatized. And that one of the things that we're doing in regards to dealing with this particular issue this evening is to have some people, some who've been a little hesitant to come forward, to begin to come forward, because one of the things that we have to do very clearly is we have to organize. And that many times people who go ahead and are attacked in a particular fashion by the Board of Miseducation, they feel isolated, or somehow they look at themselves and say, well, maybe I did something wrong, or maybe there's some way where I need to be blamed for what has happened. And what we're attempting to do this evening is begin to show that you are not isolated, because we know that in the listening audience, there are numbers of people who have stories that are as bizarre as the stories that are going to be told this evening. Well, let us start with some of the stories. And let's start, we'll have everyone, well, you know, introduce yourself and let's get started and we will move through. And, well, we'll be able to go ahead and deal with this because we have a lot of stories. It's just like you remember the Naked City, the 8 million stories in the Naked City. Unfortunately, there are too many stories to be told about the New York City Board of Miseducation.
My name is Sylvester Lewis, and I've been a teacher for 8 years with the Board of Education. And within that 8 years' time, I've never had a U rating. I live in the community. I consider myself a role model for many of the young men and the young ladies in the school system. And what happened to me basically was the Board of Ed did not give the kids supplies. These are kids who have to take the Regency exam. They complain about them not passing these exams. But in my case, the kids were not given books. And this is up. They were not given books up until February of the year. A whole semester had passed. And what I made the mistake of, and I surely shouldn't say mistake of, I turned the principal in for not giving them books. And for doing that, I was given a U rating, and now I'm trying to fight a U rating.
Mm-hmm. What school was this?
This was the High School of Economics and Finance, 100 Trinity Place in Manhattan.
Okay, and what superintendency is that?
That's Sawyer, Mr. Sawyer.
Oh, no, not who has been referred to as Uncle Tom Sawyer. Welton Sawyer is his actual name, Welton. He calls him, what does he call himself, Bill or something. He doesn't want to be known as Welton, but that's his actual name, Welton Sawyer. Yes, we know of this person.
this principal that Sylvester Lewis seems to have to deal with seems to be notorious, though, in some of his actions. Burke.
Dr. Burke.
There's a news reporter who's been following some of these actions of this particular principal. He seems to take a strong arm in trying to control the population of students that attend the High School of Economics and Finance. He's denied students even the opportunity to eat breakfast because of some decision that he makes on a whim, you know. And so not only does he think they don't need to have books, but he thinks they don't need to eat also.
One of the signs of a true colony is that they determine which blacks they want in what positions. And be you black or white, if you stand for the children, if you stand for the community, if you stand for freedom, they will find a way to rate you and get you out. And one of the schools that we investigated and we were asked to take the teacher's case, the blacks and Latinos were only 1% of the high school. This was a high school. But they received 80% of the U ratings. Mm-hmm. One of the actions we want people to take this evening is to stop saying it's me and hiding in the corner, come out of the closet, and call us and come to a meeting we're holding tomorrow, a public forum, and sign a petition, give us your stats. We want to take a class action suit. That is something we can do, and we can do now.
Okay. Let's deal with our next story here.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Sharon Sahai King. I have been with the board for approximately 14 years. Back in 96, two children came to me to speak to me about a situation with a prom. There was a prom that was supposed to take place in a month, and the charge was, I think, $125 a ticket. The kids weren't trying to get out of paying the ticket, but they needed an they needed more time to pay for their tickets. I thought it was a fair enough request. They wanted me to call the caterers. I made the phone call and found out from that phone call that not only were they overcharging the kids for the prom, but in fact, I think they had told the kids the prom was costing them $12,500, when in fact it was costing really $3,500. That's a $9,000 deficit. So at any rate, I wasn't quite sure what to do. I went and tried to report that to the COSA, who seemed as if she was accusing me of lying, and seemed as if she knew something. That's how they justified charging $125 a ticket, because it was 100. There were 100 kids graduating, and so, you know, it went up to $125 a ticket. She was very weird. She almost accused me of lying. When I went down to the principal's office, I was kicked out of a principal's office where I was, like, having conferences in that office every day. I was a cheerleading coach. I did plays at the school, a number of other things, for free, never per session. I don't think I knew anything about per session until I was in the system maybe 10 years or something. Once I was kicked out of our office, this is a principal that loved me. I mean, who wouldn't love a teacher who buys her own books, her own Delaney cards, et cetera, et cetera? And so I realized there that I had accidentally found out something that I wasn't supposed to find out. Now I'm stuck with the situation. Do I keep it quiet, mind my business, and just keep on teaching and wait for my pension? Or do I open my mouth and speak? And I chose the latter. I'm not sorry that I chose the latter. It's unfortunate what has happened to me. Teaching is something that I love very dearly. I'm very passionate about. But it, because of all of the situation now, a lot of what has gone on, a lot of stuff just went from that situation on to the next situation. I didn't get a U that year, but then the following year I got a U. And then there was just a host of things. It just became like a roller coaster. Just one situation to the next situation. People were punching in my cards, late when I was early. I mean, just crazy, crazy stuff going on. And I don't even want to go into it, because I just feel like, just sitting here seeing all of these faces, I know now that it wasn't me. And I think that in itself is giving me enough strength. It's the union sucks. I don't understand any union that...
You're talking about the United Federation of Teachers.
That's what I'm talking about. It is the most conservative union in the entire country. Any union that would tell, that would allow management to tell them that they cannot strike and then sign something saying that you cannot strike. I don't understand that. That's one of the basic foundations of most unions, the ability to strike. And we don't have that ability. Their grievance system completely sucks, because I know a lot of audience members are going to say, well, why don't you guys go to the union? The problem with the union is the grievance system goes like this. Step one, who do you speak to? When you go to step one, who hears you? The principal. Who are you usually complaining against? The principal. There's something a little wrong with that. I mean,
that's because the UST, the CSA, and the Board of Ed are one.
Exactly.
Management.
Exactly.
And the unions.
Exactly.
Are one. And what they are one and united against is our community and against teaching the children the truth, be they black or white.
Step two, the superintendent. Who's the superintendent? The person, superintendent.
Superintendent.
The superintendent is the person who hires the principal.
Right.
So if she has to fire one, it reflects badly on her. Step three, the Board of Ed. Who's the Board of Ed? They hire the superintendent. What sort of union, what sort of very conservative rightist union would set up a structure like that for teachers to air their concerns or to air grievances? And so I am now sitting around waiting for them to schedule 3 or 4 arbitrations in my favor. And this has been going on for about 2 years. After the end result of from that prom was that in 99, I believe it was, I got improperly terminated. They claimed that I didn't show up to work for 20 consecutive days, a 10-year teacher, not showing up for 20 consecutive days without notifying anybody. Thank God I have time cards to prove that I was there. So
But in the meantime, it needs to be said is that you are currently not teaching.
Absolutely not.
And that you are currently waiting for something to happen,
exactly,
which will, in fact, be in your favor.
Exactly.
What high school was this? We need to say.
Thomas Jefferson High School, who in fact is the leader of that high school is a black woman by the name of Lena Medley, who in times when we didn't have books for 4 years wore the most fabulous snakeskin shoes I've ever seen in my life. And I do love fashion. And she had the best clothes. Oh, I mean, $1,700 suits that I saw in Bloomingdale's and only wished that I could purchase. And yet there were no books and no Delaney cards and no anything in the school. But she was really well dressed though.
Okay. Let's go on to the next story. See, you are not alone.
Clearly, I just asked for a transfer to Thomas Jefferson. Now I have to worry about that.
Tell Mrs. Medley I said hi.
My name is Lorenzo Reed. I've been with the Board of Ed about 8 years all told, including my substitute time. I just want to relate a tale. There's a lot of things that happened, but this is what I thought was really outrageous from the board standpoint. I came into the system already with a graduate degree, and there's a little salary schedule which says you start at X, and if you have a X amount of education, you get a salary at, say, the end of it. I started, filed all my papers, they knew what my educational level was, they started me with the base salary. I went and got all of the documentation filed in the differential section, had all that together. They refused to pay me the salary that they should be paying me. Now I wrote, I called, I got nothing. They began to ignore me totally. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. I write to the union. Union finally steps in and they pay me the back pay. But in paying me the back pay, they didn't pay me all of it. So I said, well, I'm taking your schedules and I'm saying that you're not paying me all this money after 3 years. We had a so-called arbitration hearing, grievance hearing rather. The grievance, the payroll department didn't even show at the grievance hearing. The grievance person said, I won the hearing. However, the ruling was, payroll, go back, redo your records, and if it's determined that you owe this money, you'll pay it. If it's determined that you don't owe it, you don't pay it. They go back, come back with a set of figures that says, no, we don't owe him anything. He owes us $4,700. They say to me, we gave you a check for $4,700 in the year of so-and-so, and at that time I wasn't even on the payroll. I was a per diem employee. and we're taking your money. So I call up the payroll person who wrote me the memo, and I says, how can you take my money? If you say you gave me a check, let me see if you canceled checks. The woman says to me, my computer says you owe this money. I'm taking your money, and there's nothing you can do about it. I tried to get some kind of help. She was right. Nobody would listen to me. I even tried to get some attorneys to deal with the issue. They said, well, you must be wrong. Maybe you didn't understand the records. Maybe you didn't know how the numbers work. I says, look, I've been an accountant for 20 years before I came here. I know how the numbers work. Two lawyers wouldn't talk to me. Luckily for me, I know a little bit about law. I went and did some research. I said, there has to be some rules that say you can't take people's money like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I do some research. I find a case law that says the board can't do this. I then go find me a lawyer, young black lawyer, a young black lady who's a labor lawyer. She looked at the information. She looked at the stuff I brought to her. She filed a suit in state court. We filed a suit in state court. In the meantime, I had written to someone in the board higher up and asked for a grievance hearing. They schedule a grievance hearing. I go there with the lawyer. They see the lawyer and says, well, this lawyer can't come in here and talk to us. You can't have a lawyer in here.
Mm-hmm.
So then my lawyer says, we'll file a suit. So we file a complaint. They schedule another grievance hearing. When we walk in there, they give me our check for $4,700. But this is 3 years to get the pay. I'm trying to teach during this time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting this constant hassle. When we get to the situation where they pay me some of the money and don't pay it all, now I have to look for a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Union will not help me. I wrote to them, called them. The whole tactic is we'll ignore this people. And if you don't have the wherewithal to defend yourself,
yeah,
you're in big trouble.
You know how many stories I've heard like that, Bill Bonsia, of new teachers coming into the system. They get overwhelmed by this paperwork, this paper that has to be, and you're waiting 6 to 8 weeks to get your first check. You're a new teacher who's coming with no money to the Board of Education. They tell you you have to wait 6 to 8 weeks to get paid, and sometimes you're waiting 2 and 3 months for your first paycheck. How many teachers we lose just because of that? This payroll department, I don't know who they are or who they hire, but there are a lot of incompetent people there.
Well, the whole system seems to be showing total disrespect for the teachers.
Yeah,
I mean, to me, right now I'm having a fight with the pension people.
Well, I think we're going to have to jump in here. You see, it's not just any teachers. It's certain teachers. Teachers who have success with children. Let me introduce myself. Ralph Pointer. I started in the system in 1962, and I had 5 years experience before I came here.
Mm-hmm.
And my fight, I went to jail, lost my license, and they tried to keep me from working on any job that had anything to do with city or federal payroll. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the devastating impact that this kind of treatment on good people has had on students.
Mm-hmm.
And their futures have been lost. They have been traded to the prison industrial system, and they're upstate to balance the economy, the failing economy there. But I'm not going to talk about that. What I'm going to talk about was my not-so-sainted father told me. And when anything happened, he would just look at me and say, and then what did you do? Well, I've been hearing stories for 30 years, and I've been watching people fight mm-hmm. for 30 years. Well, that's not good enough, because we have lost 2 generations since I've been here. What are we going to do? Now, we've been sitting down working on this, and I think the first thing we must do is punish every politician who sat while this happened. And there's a whole list mm-hmm. of them, and nobody's name will not go on this list, and we must begin today with punishing them, because if we continue with the same actions that we've had before, following these pimp politicians, we will get the same results. No one has protected our children, and we complain about how our children don't respect us. We let them out there without defense, and they have been destroyed. How can they respect us? We must do something to gain respect. Number one, punish the politicians who were supposed to do that. And everyone goes down with this.
Well, there's a lot of them running in this city council
yeah.
race. And I think that's one of the ways we could look at punishing them. There are a lot of them, especially in Brooklyn, who are supporting other candidates. They want that same program, that same system to continue. They perpetuate that same ineptness in our community.
And we must guarantee them failure. Number two, here, sitting here, right around this microphone, we have people who can and will and are ready to educate. We have people who have educated and been released. We guarantee this city a fine high school with teacher training, with educational support, with supportive parents, with turnout students, and I'm talking what Miss Betty Davis has done, 95% graduation, 87% college in 4 years. This is what we can do, and the Board of Ed, it is no accident that she's not running a school. They do not want this. Now, there are many people. We have enough people who have quit the New York City system to supply it with teachers. You don't need to go to Austria. You don't need to go to Mexico. You don't need to go to the islands. We have them here in New York, but they have seen what they have seen, and they've walked away. Well, these people have spoken to me, and if Betty were to get a school today, we would staff it tomorrow. And next week, we would have a super school. So we begin, we must punish these politicians, we must guarantee them failure. I see, what's his name, from the head of the Board of Education? I just saw his name on the list.
Yeah, one of the people who's running for comptroller,
Thompson.
William Thompson.
We must guarantee Thompson
running.
Failure.
Yes.
We must guarantee Zachary Carter failure. We must guarantee all of those people who were in place and saw this criminal activity and the war crime against our people, we must guarantee their failure. And I'm going to be on the street with Mr. Straker, and we're beginning tomorrow over at Bed-Stuy Boxing Club, and we're going to have the list of names. We're going to put people's feet to the fire, and we're going to put them in the street.
All right.
I think he said Al Vann cannot attend. Is that correct, Mr. Straker?
Well, he's one of the people that's running for city
council.
That's
right. He can't
attend.
He's
coming out of the state. I'm giving up the third highest position in the state he was up for, and coming to the New York City Council. I wonder what that's all about.
Well, unfortunately, we know what that's about, where in Bedford-Stuyvesant, two people are attempting to swap seats. That we have an assembly person who is attempting to go to the city council, and a city council person who, based upon term limits, is now attempting to try to get that assembly seat.
And if we can't fire them, we failed our children.
That's right.
Anyway.
Yes, Marwu Straker, and she introduced me as not only the director of the Bedford-Stuyvesant Boxing Center, I'm an educator by training. I'm a former City University, largely out of Mega Evers, administrator and professor, and I'm the principal of St. Anthony's Christian Academy. So I deal with education. That's my love, and that's my family's love. I like to take the responsibility on putting the point exactly where it needs to go for the blame of a lot of this. We touched on it. We need to understand exactly who's behind the problems we're facing. It is clearly the United Federation of Teachers, and we need to understand that it is controlled by a specific racial ethnic group. And you can trace it back to Albert Schenker back in the 1960s. This population, and I know they're going to start saying we're anti-Semitic, so we need to say right out there, no, we are very pro who the Semitic people are.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, the United Federation of Teachers
at
is largely controlled by the Jewish population, whom, by putting our children's lives and future in jeopardy, benefit directly their own population. Every time one of our children is rejected, he goes to a psychologist, a social worker, a jail system, which is controlled by them, which is manned and staffed by them, so they get funds from us two and three times. Unfortunately, the black teachers in our public school system have never gotten themselves together in enough strength to need to form a black teachers union within or exclusive of the United Federation of Teachers.
We need a
union. Until this is done, they're not going to be able to tackle the foremost problem. The principals, superintendent, CSA, all of the other institutions call the shot. Now, pointing out what the gentleman just said, the United Federation of Teachers is the biggest funder and contributor to the black politicians in our community.
Okay.
And therefore, that's why none of the black politicians are speaking out about the travesty that our kids are facing in the public school system. Mm-hmm. You have the mayor, you have the governor, you have everybody else, all of the newspaper media speaking out about what's going on with our kids. You have not heard a single black politician on a consistent basis use the power of his office to address this issue. Mr. Albert Vann is the biggest betrayer of our children and our community because he started off with J.T. Riosi, starting the separation of the school board system back in the 1968 when I left for college. Mm-hmm. Now it comes out that he's also the main sponsor, along with Zelmanette Montgomery, mm-hmm. to take the power away from the school board and to give it to Mr. Rudy Clue, who at that time was chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
All of this has led to a continual demise and degradation of what our children are living in the public school system. I will close by saying Mr. Levy needs to resign immediately because he's failed us as a businessman and he has no educational credentials.
Could I just interject right here? This is just because you said that, I'm going to say this to kind of piggyback what you were saying. I went to the UFT once to discuss one of my cases, and a rep was there. I happen to have an Afro wig, and when I wear this wig, I look a lot like Angela Davis. So mm-hmm. I wore the wig to the meeting, not because of anything other than I love Afros, and I've always loved an Afro. I wore an Afro for 15 years, so, you know, I just wore the wig. Do you know that he had me searched downstairs? Because mm-hmm. I just happened to mention something upstairs about, I said, you know, this is the type of stuff that makes people want to blow up buildings. That's all I said. I said it kind of in jest or whatever.
The mayor said it.
And he saw the wig. And once he saw the wig and that statement paired together, he had, by the time I went downstairs mm-hmm. in the brand new fabulous building that we're in now, UFT, that is, the Marriott, searched downstairs just because he said, well, that hairdo, and then when you said that, I just thought automatically. Mm-hmm.
So this was your UFT representative
who's
going ahead and saying that you need to be searched.
One of the other things we need
because
to do.
I had an Afro wig on, mm-hmm. and because I said that it just makes people so angry that, you know, mm-hmm. it might make
besides
somebody want to
besides the class action suit that teachers who are being cleansed from the system need to bring, we need to follow up on the Committee for Fiscal Equity court case where New York has been awarded a certain amount of monies mm-hmm. and funds. We have identified a consultant while these panels were being held in Brooklyn to determine an accountability system for how these funds will be spent. We currently have a consultant, Dr. Pelicano, who has created a computer software program that will stop double entry bookkeeping mm-hmm. budgetary practices
that
by
will
the Board
keep
of
control
Ed.
Of every dollar and every person on payroll or the Board of Education. Naturally, it can be done. We're in a computer age. We have this program. We have this consultant. We want that as every politician who would ask for our support must say. We want this program instituted and to get to the governor and say, you say you want accountability, we do, and they must stand up for that. We need a union, and let me be very clear about this. We need a union that supports the policies that we support, and we make it public, and everybody is welcome to join. Join us. Allow us to join you in this whole program of punishing those who have offended us and supporting those who support our program.
Finally,
all right.
There's a district attorney, a young lady, a lawyer, who's running for district attorney, and she advises that she wants to prosecute people who steal from the Board of Ed. It's time these people went to jail the way our children go to jail for stealing 2 cents.
Criminal behavior.
They should be incarcerated with those children.
But you know the interesting thing, and that is at one time there was a Negro who was the Auditor General at the New York City Board of Miseducation. Okay. And when it became very clear that there were a number of white districts where there was serious fiscal mismanagement and theft, he was asked to go ahead and conduct audits of those districts.
Mm-hmm.
And after some investigation, he said very clearly it was out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
He could not, although he was the Auditor General, go ahead and do this particular investigation of these white districts.
He should resign then.
Well, he's gone now, but it doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. See, I mean, the problem is that no matter who these Negroes are, that it's going to be a problem because wherever they are, how high they go, they're only going to be representing the interests of the people who brought them in the first place, and we know who those particular people are. But we need to do a couple of things here. We are going to take some phone calls. The number here is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We need to also say that when we came in the building, there was a demonstration going on downstairs, and it appears that one of our colleagues, Robert Knight, has been fired, and there was a picket, an emergency picket outside regarding the firing of Robert Knight, an award-winning journalist who at this particular point no longer has a program at WBAI. Anyway, listen, we're going to take our normal little musical interlude. We're going to be back with you shortly. The number here, 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900, as we discuss the New York City Board of Miseducation and some of the strange going on thereabout. Saxophone Quartet, which I've been hearing in my head for quite some time now, and I figured that I would play one of their tunes and probably have another one that we'll play at the end of this program. Anyway, in the studio with us is station manager Utrice Lead, who has a correction of what I was speaking about, and that was the supposed firing of Robert Knight, and I think she wants to say something.
Well, what I'd like to say is what I've been saying to people in our orientation sessions about how you do good journalism. And the way you do it is you certainly verify your facts. To use these airwaves to spread rumors and to say, misstate things that are not correct, that is not why this program is on the air. Secondly, this is not a program or any other program to be used for the discussion of personnel matters. And that's all I have to say. With regard to my own, I understand I myself was attacked on this program about my tenure at the City Sun.
Yes, would I like to discuss that? Come on here with you and really deal with the fact because
I
was there.
Excuse me.
Hold it.
Excuse me, sir.
Wait a minute.
Excuse me, sir. I am in charge of the program and the integrity of the air. And I'm saying that something was just occurring here that was incorrect, and it needs to be corrected. And I have corrected it, and thank you.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you very much.
But we also need to be clear that there's been no mention of you and your tenure at the City Sun as part of this particular program.
It was mentioned.
No. I would like to come
all right
here with you.
Excuse me.
Now that you have raised that issue.
No, I'm very much open to it.
Okay.
But I'm...
Ralph Pointer, listen for Ralph and you, Treese, to discuss the issues. She has just said it.
The point I'm making is about the role of the host. The role of the host is to share information that is accurate and to make a strong effort to ascertain the veracity of what you disperse or disseminate as fact. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
And my premise is...
Well, all right, hold on, folks, before we go ahead and get boonswoggled here and get, we're going to be speaking about something else. And, we're all clear that we did not mention Utrecht's lead and did not mention the City Sun as part of this particular program. The other thing is that I have part of a text of a memo that was supposedly given to Robert Knight. But that, of course, is another issue. Anyway, what we want to do is, as I said, everyone, you need to get your headphones on so we can begin to take phone calls here. The number here is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
Two things. Mm. First, what's with the music? I can appreciate that you heard it in your head all day, but... We were on a roll. I wanted to hear more from the woman who was put out from the meeting because she had on an Afro wig.
Yeah, okay.
I want to know about that. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a voter. I want to discuss that. Secondly, who was the host? What was that about?
What about? I don't understand.
The person, who was affiliated with the City Sun.
What happened is that station manager Utrecht Lead came into the studio here and said what she had to say in regards to the Robert Knight situation, okay? And that was what was heard, and then she made mention of herself in the City Sun, but as you know, as a listener, we made no mention of Utrecht Lead and the City Sun as part of this particular
program.
No,
not at all. Okay, right. What's her, Utrecht Lead?
Utrecht Lead. She is the station manager here.
Station manager.
Yes. Okay, listen, we've got to go, but thank you for your call.
Wait, I have a question.
All right, well, come on now.
Okay. I have to hold on for 40 minutes to talk to you folks.
Sometimes.
All right. Could you name the politicians who are getting all the, I suspect they're getting all the kickbacks, the ones who are being reelected but who don't actually do anything. Could you name those names again so we know who not to vote for when it comes up? Because I see them every morning when I go to the train station passing out their flyers. So could you name names again so we have a solid list?
Well, I guess some people are going to be naming some politicians' names here.
Yes, we are going to name names. We have to understand, first of all, that we are living in a colonial system with colonial administrators, and everybody in position in the Democratic and the Republican Party have been colonial. But join us Friday, July 27th, 2001, at Gates and... Marcus Garvey Boulevard, and we're going to be naming the politicians, and we're going to be calling the politicians down, 6 p.m., Friday, July 27th. We're going to name them as they are there, but listen for 917-853-9759. That's the New Abolition Movement, 917-853-9759, and we're going to be calling a lot of people, a lot of names, and we're not going to go home. We're going to be out there handing out flyers with them, our own.
WBAI, you're on the air. Good evening. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Are you listening? Oh, great. Let me cut my sound down.
Please.
Okay. I'd just like to say I'm very happy to be able to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to impart something to the panel to give them some idea of the power that's in their hands, which is what the politician in Harlem, gosh, is this something I can remember, the Abyssinian Church?
Oh, you're talking about
anyway,
Reverend Butts.
Going back to Erasmus High School, to show you how much power you really have, I'm not talking about something I heard. This is something I actually did. All of you have driven past Erasmus High School, and you saw the construction and so forth and so on. And that was a project that was being sidetracked for 17 years until me as a parent and a few other parents at Erasmus stepped into the breach. And we exposed the school construction authority. We exposed the principals. We exposed the mayor, everybody. In fact, the case was in the Daily News called Halls of Shame. I'm sure all of y'all remember it.
I know who this is.
Yeah, this is Muta Ali. and my friends and enemies, I want them to know who I am. You know, I'm not hiding from nobody because I feel like I have as much power as anybody else. So I'm giving my name. And what we did was we secretly smuggled in 60 Minutes that took pictures of the school. We secretly smuggled in reporters from the Daily News who took pictures of the school. And we did it after hours. We did it on our own recognizance, and we did it because we were what they call a parents' association. Forget that PTA bit, that parents' teachers' association. Forget that, because the teachers are controlled by the UFT and the Jews down at City Hall. So when we went into that school, and my daughter was a student there, we abolished the PTA, and we set up a PA, because the PA doesn't have to answer to anybody. We're taxpayers, we're in charge, and we ran it. So
Good suggestion.
We brought those people in, they took the pictures, and we exposed the school on the Daily News. It came out, they printed 1,500,000 copies of that called The Halls of Shame. I hope y'all still have a copy. And then we took that, and we made 15,000 additional copies and sent it to every politician in the country, all the United States senators, the United Nations, every head of state in the world. And let me tell you something. Within a space of 30 days, after the Halls of Shame came out, there was so much pressure put on the federal, state, and city government of the United States that they crawled out of their holes and came up with $55.8 million, and that's the construction you see on Erasmus today.
All right. Well, listen.
Now, that's what you can do if you have the fortitude, the backbone, and you're willing to take on the fight. And not only that, we had the district attorney lock up the custodian and all the other people who have been stealing money for years at Erasmus. So don't let nobody tell you that the custodians have a whole lot of power and nobody, and even principals are afraid of them. The hell with that. The power is in the hands of the citizens. The power is in the hands of the parents. All you have to do is use it.
Okay.
And the first thing you want to do...
Well, listen, we got to go.
Okay.
But, thank you for the goal. 15 minutes in jail.
Okay, so y'all...
15 minutes.
All right. We need to make one correction here, and that is, you know, there was, again, a reference to the Jews controlling City Hall, and Giuliani, of course, happens to be Italian, and when David Dinkins, unfortunately, was the mayor, things were almost as bad as they happen to be now, educationally. So we need to be clear, especially at this particular point, that there are people of color who are responsible for the miseducation of our children in many of our districts, in many of our schools, and we cannot keep necessarily blaming other people.
Absolutely.
We have to take some responsibility ourselves.
We must start at home.
Yes. I'd like to make a comment largely about what he's saying. We need to be very clear that we need to focus on the human beings inside of the buildings, because right now we have, our buildings are better than any other third world country, and they're producing students that are far academically superior to what we are producing. We need to focus on what is happening to our children.
Let's get another call.
Hello? WBAI, you're on the air. Good evening.
Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I usually don't call, but I'm a first-time caller, and I felt the need to because I'm homeschooling my own child.
Okay.
And I began the process out of frustration. Within a year, I had my child in about four or five schools in 1 year. And, you know, I have I believe that this entire situation began from the 50s. If you recall the case with Thurgood Marshall and Linda Brown, they began the process then. Okay, I attended Theodore Roosevelt in the Bronx, and I recall in the late 60s when all the whites left the area, they took the chairs, the teachers, the books, the gym that had all the apparatus for children to practice on to become, to be in the Olympics, let's say. They even took that with them. And that began the process of the school system declining, the housing, and the job market, until where we are today.
Right. One of the other things that needs to be said is that despite Brown versus the Board of Education in 1954, schools are currently more segregated in New York City than they've ever been.
That is very true. And they don't have to do a study for that.
No.
I mean, that is just something that I've known for quite a while. And another thing, I have a theory about all these exams. Why is it our children have to take them in pencils? And how do they know that all these children are going to be attending summer school in September? You know, there's something that's wrong.
Those are real good questions.
Those are definite issues.
Can I just say, Sister, this is Barbara Smith Boyd. You are to be commended for doing the homeschooling, and you should really know that there are many more parents like yourself who are doing homeschooling, and I wish you would get in contact with me so I could share with you some materials that you might be able to benefit for, your child might be able to benefit from.
Okay, well, listen, we need to get some phone numbers here for folks so that people can be contacted and we can kind of continue this particular discussion, because obviously it needs to continue. The phones are all lit up and we've got to get out of here. Yes, we were distracted slightly, but we stayed on point. Numbers.
Okay, New Abolitionist Movement. We believe in fighting the new slavery. 917-853-9759. 212-625-9696. That last number is our legal number for those of you who want to participate in the class action suit. Tomorrow night, put your body where your thoughts and heart are. Come Friday, July 27, 6 p.m., to the New Bed-Stuy Crown Heights Center at 275 Marcus Garvey Boulevard between Gates and Quincy. We're having a political forum. Speak to Siegel, Fisher, Hevesy, and Bill Thompson. Let them know what you think.
Okay.
Okay. Concerned Educators Alliance Against Depression, the teacher organization. All you teachers out there want to fight, you want to keep it in the teacher group, call us. You get two for one. 917-853-9759. And I'm sorry for those up in Connecticut who have called me, who are calling in on the program. We didn't get a chance to get to their program.
No, well, we didn't. We need to say that the African Poetry Theater is continuing to do what they do so well. For information about that, those of you who live out in Jamaica, Queens, you can call 718-523-3312. That's 718-523-3312. Other than that, well, a lot of us are going to be out on the pier on Sunday, July 29th from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. That's Pier 63 on 23rd Street. And for information about that, that's going to be the 29th, this Sunday. You can call 212-289-5951. That's 212-289-5951. I guess I'll be hanging out at the pier or at the end of 23rd Street myself. So those of you who want to converse or whatever, you can come on out to the pier, see what's going on, and, well, some of us will be there. Anyway, you've been listening to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basir M. Jawi, and, well, we had an interesting program today, as we usually do.
Well, good.
Well, I'm honored to have participated.